different kinds of practice of Buddhism. You know, we practice Buddhism in different way. Some will treat Buddhism as a religion. They go and pray and ask for things. Well, that's one way of practicing Buddhism. Another is to go around doing all the good things, you know, like what the Buddha says, you must be compassionate and do all good things. But the very important thing which the Buddha taught initially is for us to improve ourselves. Improve ourselves in a way that we can get rid of our, what is called suffering. Now, suffering is actually a word which is used to mean what is stress in modern day. I'm quite sure you guys, regardless of where you are, who you are, you all have stress in your life, sometime or other. So this is, you can say that Buddhism, as preached by the Buddha, is a way of de-stressing ourselves. Now, but the Buddha goes a lot further. When you de-stress yourself, if you relax, then you go and play cricket, you go and play tennis, you go to the pub and drink alcohol, you get more stress, isn't it? But the Buddha go further, one step further. It says when you de-stress yourself, you get to have a change in your mentality. So it's very important that we go into the study of our mentality like the Buddha taught us. Your mental self. Now, in everything, we have got a body, we have got a mind. You have got a body, you have got a mind. Isn't it? So every one of us has got it. And if we have got a body and no mind, what happens? You're dead. Isn't it? Yeah, a lot of things, the mortuary there. You've got body but no mind. But if you've got a mind and no body, then you're nobody. So it's to that. It's very important that we got to understand this. This is where everything starts, the body and the mind. And the second thing which the Buddha taught us is that things don't come out of the thin air. Nobody comes and wave a hand and then everything happens. Things happen because of things which happened before it. And you put it as in a modern day formula, you can say that because depending on A, B arises. Because there's A, therefore B arises. And depending on B, C arises. Depending on the C, D arises. So life is all to do with this dependent of the previous things. Everything we do, we have a past. For example, what you are today is what you were yesterday, isn't it? If you die yesterday, then you don't have today. Right? So this is basically what it is, depending on things. Now, science will tell you that when you see an apple fruit hanging on the tree, so what comes before it? The apple has got to be a flower first, isn't it? Depending on the flowering, an apple fruit appears. Now, what does a flower depend on? Depending on the apple plant, apple tree. And now, where does the apple tree come from? It comes from the sapling, from a little tiny little seedling. Depending on the seed of a previous plant, therefore, this apple tree comes to being. Because this apple comes to being, therefore, we have got apple flowers, therefore, we got apple fruits. Now, where does this seed come from? The last apple, isn't it? The last fruit, then you plant the seed, then you get a thing. And where does the last fruit come from? Another tree, another flower, another things. Right? Now, this is just very rough idea of how things, you know, one thing leads to another. And depending arising is what actually it is. Depending on the past, the present, or depending on the present, the future arises. So we can also say that when you say, when a carpenter builds a table, you can't say that he invented the table. He didn't. He's got the source of tables from somewhere. He's only a person who assembles the table. He's got to get the wood somewhere. He's got to get the nail somewhere. He's got to get the paint somewhere. So these are all the conditions, right, which will allow him to make the table. So the carpenter is not like God who just make something. So this is the way the Buddha tries to explain to us. Now, he explains something more than that. It's not only a physical thing. It's not only building tables or talking about apple trees and fruits. He talks about something which is more important. For those of you who are well-versed in your teachings of the Buddha, I'm talking about serious ones, right? Not the ones who go to temple and put your incense and expect to pass your exams. So if you're very serious, you got to train yourself. So in our training, we got to learn about the Four Noble Truths, right? Which is an important part of Buddhism. So if you say, okay, what's so important about it? The Buddha said the first noble truth is about suffering. Right? Now, this suffering is, put in modern day term, is stress. You have got stress, I have got stress. Right? Your neighbor has got stress, your parents got stress, right? Your boyfriend or girlfriend has got stress. Everybody has got stress. But because we do not understand this stress, right, therefore we keep on stressing. Right? And sometimes we say, okay, somebody tells you, I can help you de-stress. Like what I told you, go and enjoy yourself, go and play cricket, go and play tennis, you de-stress yourself. But after that, you don't know when to stop, you go back to stress again. Right? So this is what it is in our life, every day. Now, the Buddha promises, he says, my teachings will allow, enable you to stop your stress permanently. So it goes to the second noble truth. The first stress is what? Your fears, your worries, your disappointments, everything. It's not just only on passing exams, but fears about failing. But then you want to do something and you cannot achieve it. These are all the things which gives you all this suffering. So the Buddha says, okay, we got to look into the cause of it. The Buddha is not a god. You say, I believe you believe in me, I get rid of your stress. That is not true. No God can do that. So he gives you explanation. He just explained to us how come we get the stress. Now you get the stress from everything you do, isn't it? You walk to go and wait for a bus, you stress sometimes, or most of the time. You're scared that you're late. If you meet somebody bang into you, you get upset. You get stressed. If the bus comes too early and leave without you, you're stressed. If if the bus is late, you get the stress. All these things. Now, every day, how many times we've got to meet with it? So the Buddha says, okay, let's look into the origin of all these things. And the origin of it is actually the concept of dependent origination, which we are going to talk about. Of course, the third noble truth is once you understand that, you can get rid of, you can stay away from this stress. Right? It's not that you don't do things anymore. A lot of people are so simple in their thinking. They think that I don't want stress. Never mind. I shave my head, I go and become a monk. Everything is provided for me. I got my food and everything. But you stay in the temple, you got more stress. Right? So, but the Buddha taught us, you can actually practice at home without the stress as well. It depends on your outlook, your understanding of life. So you can say that dependent origination is also explanation of our life, how we conduct ourselves, how we do things. Now, the fourth noble truth is about the way to do it. So the path leading to the cessation of suffering or cessation of self. Right? To put in Pali, it's called, That means we end ourselves, the path, the practice which you can do to end your suffering. Now, I told you before, it's not a simple way out just to shave your head and go into a temple. It doesn't end your stress that way. It's the way you understand it. Understand things, the way you think about things, you accept things, or you don't want to do certain things or the resolution you make, right, to improve yourself. So that is the second thing, right understanding, right thoughts, right? And in order to do it, you've got to have that sort of mental attitude. And the mental attitude comes from right effort, right meditation or right mindfulness and right concentration, right? And then, of course, from there, once you start to understand more about life, then we can start to bring about certain morality in us, right? You want to do things which you don't cause any suffering to others or to ourselves. We can also look into the way we conduct ourselves, right? And so that is the ethics, right? So you could have heard about what people always say, sila, samadhi, and panya. Right? Sila means our ethics, our morality, how we conduct ourselves. Samadhi means the mental attitude we have, the training of the mind. And panya means the right understanding and the right thought. So this dependent origination will enable us to be able to follow this path a lot easier. Otherwise, they are just words. We just take the teachings of the Buddha as rules and regulations. But when you understand the working of the mind, then you can do things a lot better and a lot easier. Now, we'll go back to this stress or suffering. We know that there is suffering. What causes suffering? You got to be you, isn't it? Without you, if there's suffering, then you would have suffering. So because you are there, you do, you there, because of you, therefore there's suffering at the end. And between you and the suffering, there's a lot of things happening. You can say that the Buddha is very, very advanced for his time. He'd be a very, very good psychology teacher if he's in the 21st century. He can understand the workings of our mind very well. He says, what have you got? What's in you? You've got consciousness, isn't it? If you're unconscious, you can't do anything. So you got this consciousness, and the consciousness makes your body works with your mind. Right? And what is in your body? There are six things in your body. Your eyes, your ears, your nose, your tongue, your whole other, your body, as well as your mind, your brain. Isn't it? Can you add any more on it? You go back and think. You can add any more, come and tell me tomorrow. So, these six, the eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, and the mind or the brain, we call them the sense organs, the sense bases. It's a base where we receive signals from outside. Isn't it? You receive signal through what you see. What you see is a signal to you. How do you see a book? Not in person, but I know that I see the video of you, right? So my eyes is receiving signals. So this is the sense base. My ears is also receiving signals. If you talk, I'll be hearing what you say. There is also signal, right? Now, of course, I can smell you, right? But if we are nearby or if there's anything happening in my house, if my dog passed by, if it's smelly, then I can smell it, right? So there's a smelling. Now, tasting is when you eat, right? Or when things get into your tongue, and then you taste the thing. And then the tactile feeling, the bodily feelings, is when you touch something or something touches you. Sometimes the touch is so subtle that you don't feel it. Do you feel the touch of air on your skin now or not? Until I told you, you never felt it, do you? But your skin is actually touching air. So, five of them. The sixth one is the most important one, which is a function of the brain, thinking. It's from thinking that you get the ideas of things from. You get the signals, not necessarily a physical signal. Right? There's no color waves around, there's no sound wave, and there's no touching of the, you know, the tongue, chemical things in your tongue and your nose and everything. This thought is something which is more subtle, which is abstract. That is a function of the mind. You just receive signal through your thoughts. What you see, it becomes your thought, isn't it? Now, you look at my video, right? Now, before you have ever seen me, what are your thoughts about me? And now, what are the thoughts you have about me? Right? So, these are the sort of things, right, we do. You think of what you're going to do tomorrow. That's a thought. They are not real at all. Right? They are just what you work out in your mind. So these are the sort of things we have got to be very careful about. There are six things. And so from your body, your mind controls all these things. The mind works on it. And these are the workings of the mind as well. When you see it, the mind works. Now, for you to see certain things, you can't really see it yet. If the other condition, a very important condition, is not there. That is, for you to see, you have got to have eye consciousness. Supposing you are blind, you can't see, isn't it? And when you are deaf, you can't hear. When your nose misfunction, you can't smell. You've tried it. I know you experienced that many times before. When you suffer from a cold, I can't smell the thing. You walk past toilet, you don't even know that you're walking past a toilet. Now, same thing with the taste. When your tongue is numb by taste, you can't taste things. And the person who is paralyzed, who have got no sensation of the body, they can't feel the touch. And the person who is dead or who's lost his consciousness cannot think. So we got to have all this consciousness, the corresponding consciousness, to do things. And you cannot use your eye consciousness to hear. Your eye consciousness got to work with your eyes so that the eyes can see a form. Right? That means the eye object. When you have a sense of hearing, you got ear consciousness, then you can hear a sound. So these are the things which allows us to do it. Now you're just wondering, what has it got to do with dependent origination? It is very important, because that's where everything starts. Everything starts from it. What your suffering starts from here. So from what you see, what you hear, what you smell. If you don't see anything bad, then what happens? You're not unhappy. But if you don't see anything bad, you hear something bad, you start to get stressed, isn't it? Now, when you want to enjoy yourself, then all of a sudden the things, okay, what happens is you watch a nice television show, okay, or video, and all of a sudden the screen goes blank. What happens in your mind straight away? Are you happy or not? Straight away, you got the stress. And if you start to fiddle with the video and nothing happens, you get upset, you get angry, and so on. Right? That is for people who are not trained. But we Buddhists are very nice people, so we train ourselves so that we don't get angry. Right? So that is, when you understand dependent origination, it makes it much easier for you to be able to come into terms with your moods and all those things. That means you get angry, you get upset less often. So, when you have your body and your mind thus working with all the sense, six sense bases opening up for things, and that's what you are every day, then what happens after that? You take one example of how it works. You got an ear which can hear, okay? Now you walk to the bus stand and somebody suddenly yells something rude. What happens with you? your ear come into contact with a sound, isn't it? Huh? Some, then what happens? Because you got the mind there, your brain can tell you it is something rude. If the fellow yells at you in Greek or Czechoslovakian, you think you understand or not? You don't understand, you say, toilet du vong. You know? So I don't care about you. So, but because you understand it, so there's this sensation in your ears. And the sensation is not pleasant. You know that this fellow is abusing me. But before you know he's abusing, the words offend you. Right? Then it becomes an unpleasant object. And then unpleasant object, you hold on to it. Right? We tend to cling on to it, craving. We crave for this unpleasant things. Right? You can understand you crave for pleasant things, but you've got to understand we also crave for unpleasant things. Think that when you hear unpleasant things, you can't shake it away. Right? You can't let it go. So you cling on to it, you hold on to it and say, I think that is abusive. Right? And then what happens? You have intention of getting upset, getting angry. And when you get upset and angry, who suffers first? The fellow maybe keep on abusing. He abused you, then he abused the fellow. Next, you guys who got abused keep on getting upset. And then that spoils your day. And that's the birth of a deed to want to get upset. And then when you get upset, it goes down again. That becoming upset becomes an object of your mind. No longer object of the ear. It becomes a thought. You walk and you start to think about it. That fella is a stupid fool. And the fella shouldn't abuse people and so on. And you get angry without knowing it. And then all of a sudden, your friend come and tap you on your shoulder. You turn around and you abuse him. So you get upset and then you upset other people. Or you get so upset that you can't even, if you are not a good trained Buddhist, you get upset, you bring the thing to your class, and then you start, while the lecturer is talking, you're still thinking of what's happening in the bus stand this morning. So who is a stupid person? So the Buddha says, you are all stupid. They call us ignorant. Right? So in some teachings of the dependent origination, they talk about this ignorance. Ignorance of these things which are happening. Ignorance of us getting into trouble. Right? And we get into trouble all the time. So this is basically what is stated in the dependent origination. It says, dependent on the body of the mind, contact arises. So contact means contact of the six sense objects, one or the other. And then dependent on contact, sensation arises. That means your feeling arises, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant. And then dependent on sensation, craving arises. That is craving for these six sense objects of form, of that means of sight, of sound, smell, taste, tactile feelings, and your thoughts. Right? And depending on craving, clinging arises. Clinging means clinging on your own idea. Because when the craving becomes very strong, you get the idea that this is my idea, right? So there's a rising of this ego, a rising of the self. And then from there, becoming arises. And that's the words we use in teaching dependent origination, becoming. Becoming means the intention to act. And then from there, when you got intention to act, then there's birth of a deed. That means birth of an action by you. When you get angry, is one of the actions which we always do. You worry is another of the action. And then it depends on the period, the thing that action becomes age and then eventually dies off. But sometimes a lot of thoughts don't die. We keep on coming back, recurring. Like when it recurs, it's no longer the same cycle. It becomes object of the mind. So basically, that is what it is. So you look at so many things in your life. Now let's look at some very pleasant things. When you see something you like. You know, just now I saw, like every time I go to have a talk in Unibuds, you got a very nice little Buddha image there, isn't it? Yeah? We always bow to the Buddha image. And I like the Buddha image so much. Now, what happens is my eyes comes into contact with an object. The Buddha image is an object. Right? Now, because I'm a Buddhist, I like that object because it's an object of reverence for us. We revere the whole thing. Right? And to me, there's a very pleasant sight to see. Right? So much so that I like it so much that I crave for it. I crave for the object what I see. Right? I like it. So then the more I like it, I like it because I find it so nice. All the eye there. Then from there, I got an intention of wanting to own the Buddha image. So what do I do? I'm going to tell you guys, can you all give me the image or not? So if you are kind enough to give me the image, I got a lot of problems. I tell you later. But if you don't give me the image, don't give me the statue or don't give me the Buddha Rupa, what happens? I get upset because I don't get it. And then when I get upset, what do I think? This kid's in the Unibuds. You know, got no respect for old men. I've been talking in the Unibuds for 30 years and still I ask for a small thing like a Buddha image and they wouldn't give it to me. So I get angry. Getting angry at you guys. What do I get angry for? It's not because you don't give it to me. It's because of my craving, right? My clinging. See, so that's very stupid of me to do so. Right? Now, if I were to be good enough, coming from the stage of sensation, I say, okay, I know that is very nice, but I won't go further than that. Right? I want to have it, but I don't. It's not necessary that I have it. Yeah, I let go. No story. Nothing happens after that. But if I ask for it, you don't give me, I get upset with you guys. And say, next time I won't talk to you anymore. When you come and invite me, I say, sorry, I can't come. I won't teach all these young, stingy people Dharma. Right? So that's how common people do. But if we were to be wise enough, then we say, okay, this is my fault, something which is within my control. I'll stop it. Now, supposing you give me the Buddha image. I say, Jim, you're very nice for us, right? Never mind, we can buy another one the next time or go and ask a temple for one, but you can have this. I got more problems. Because I go back, I don't know where to put it. I got to put it in a place. Do I pray at it every day or not? Do I put water? Do I put flowers or not? I got more headache, isn't it? So whichever way, craving does not bring us anything good. So basically, the Buddha says, if there is no becoming, there's no birth. If there's no clinging, there's no becoming. If there's no craving, there's no clinging. If there's no sensation, there is no craving. But we cannot avoid having sensation. You are a living human being, remember. So what we can do is we can cut off the link between sensation and craving. When I have a sensation for something which is really very nice like that, I can say it's very nice. Stop. You know where to stop. There's no problem after that. But the trouble, we do not know how to stop. We just carry it away by our emotions and our desires. Now, you have also heard that the Buddha talked about attachment, isn't it? Yeah. Now, that's what it means by, from you, attachment. If you have attachment, then you got suffering. You, attachment, therefore stress. And the attachment is the whole thing of what we are talking in dependent origination. So you can also say that dependent origination teaches us all about attachment. The attachment starts from craving. When you start to crave, there is attachment. We've got to be clear about that all the time. But unfortunate for us, our mind is such that we are not trained to do that. From very young days, we keep on attaching to things. Attach more and more and more and more. We need some attachment in this world, in this material world. But when the attachment gets too much, it becomes a problem to you, yourself. So we got to know when the attachment is too much as lay people. I'm not talking about monks and all this, right? I'm not concerned with monks, but talking about you. What is your attachment now? You got some attachment which is fairly good, right? It's for your own future and so on. You want to do all these things, get a degree, get a career and all this. Otherwise, you won't be here, won't you? So you got to understand that is the attachment which we need to have for the time being. Right? And for you to do well is what is required. But don't start to get ideas about getting to be attached to more and more, unrealistic things. Right? Now, if we don't have that thing to hold us back, you find that a lot of our desires are very, very unrealistic. For a lot of people, we do not understand that living in a house, we only need one house. So when you start to have one house, you start to think of having to have another house. And you need one car to travel. And when you have one car, you start to say, oh, how nice you've got a second car. You got a car which goes around, brings you around. Then, no, not good enough. I must have a Mercedes. Then after a Mercedes, what is the next? Lamborghini. So you keep on wanting to be higher and higher. Now, you got to think, what is the basic? What is the needs? Why do you need a car? And what are the conditions? You should understand that a car should have only 5 wheels. Right? 4 of those rubber wheels and 1 steering wheel to bring you safely from point A to point B. That is all. But because of our craving, our desire, which we put into ourselves, that you keep on wanting, read books and say, oh, you must have this and must have that. Therefore, we start to get more and more fancy. And these people who are doing business, they know that the more fancy it is, the more money they charge you, isn't it? So you got to work harder for it. And eventually you get more problems. If you buy a cheap car, you park it by the roadside, it's all right, isn't it? But you get a very expensive car, you park it by the roadside, you worry. Somebody will scratch the car, somebody will bang the car and so on. So you see what sort of problems you're causing to yourself unnecessarily. So that is the whole thing. If you understand dependent origination and understand your craving, your clingings and all these things, your attachment to things, then you can regulate yourself and be more reasonable with yourself. So this is the whole thing. The reason why the Buddha taught is not simply to put forward a philosophy, but it's talking about something which is very, very practical. It gives you an opportunity to reduce your suffering, right? And eventually it causes to get rid of a lot of unnecessary suffering which we impose on ourselves. Now, many of you have attended meditation courses and all this, retreats and all this. The reason why the Buddha encouraged his people to meditate is because he wants you to understand dependent origination. He wants you to understand it so that it's easier for you to don't get attached to things, to let go of things. So the other very important sutta, this sutta is one of the long sutta from the long sayings of the Buddha, the Digha Nikaya, and this sutta 15. Sutta 15, which if you want to, I'm quite sure you got a Digha Nikaya in your library. You can go and refer to it. It's called Maha Nidana Sutta. Nidana means origination. Great Origination Sutta. Well, it's Sutta 15. In that, and the background of the sutta is that the Buddha was in the land of the Kurus in India. The Kurus are a kind of Indians which in the olden days, people did some research into it, and they found out that the land of the Kurus were quite fertile and all this. The people are economically better, and therefore they have got better education and better way of thinking. So the Buddha taught to them this very important thing because they can understand it a lot better. And the other sutta which the Buddha preached to the Kurus is what we call the Satipatthana Sutta, the sutta of the four foundation of mindfulness. You see, so that the mindfulness and this dependent origination or this origination has got a very important connection. It's only through mindfulness meditation that you can realize this origination. Now, when you sit down and be mindful, in the Mindfulness Sutta, the Buddha talked about mindfulness of the mind. Mindfulness of the body, mindfulness of the mind, mindfulness of the mental objects. So when we talk about mindfulness of the mind, it's mindful of the things which we are craving, mindfulness of the things which we cling on to. When you sit down there and just trying to focus on your breathing, all of a sudden your mind thinks of something. Now, when your mind thinks of something, what do you normally do? You follow it, right? Especially when there's something pleasant or unpleasant. Right? Now, when you sit down there, you want to focus on the breathing, suddenly you think, how nice to have a Mercedes-Benz, right? If you like cars. Then what happens? You no longer focus on the breathing. You are focusing on the car. The car did not exist. Isn't it? Because there's a thought in your mind. So you start to think, this car must be like this, must be like that, and so on. And that takes away your focus. And that brings about your craving. So in the mindfulness meditation, when we have such a thought, the Buddha taught us, let go. So in Buddhism, a lot of times, we got to learn how to let go. And letting go means letting go of our emotions from the very beginning. If you can, you sit down there and you think, okay, in breath, out breath, you watch your in breath, your out breath, or rising and falling. Then all of a sudden, cha kway teow. What happens when you think of cha kway teow? Malaysians and the Indonesians, I like our cha kway teow so much. You can smell the thing, you can see the thing. Yeah? And if you got you come from Penang, you go there, there are about 30 or 40 famous stores of char kway teow there. You know, this fella, this fella, that one, everybody. You can smell the smell, you can look at the sight, you can imagine yourself being a char kway teow. What happened to your concentration? Gone. Yeah? So the Buddha taught us in the mindfulness meditation is when you think of something like that, just know that it's a thought. At the time, when you're sitting down there to focus on your breathing. Whatever it is, char kway teow, Hokkien mee, or mee rebus, they're all not real. The real thing in front of you is your breathing. So there you are. You just focus on the breathing. Now, why is it we want to focus on the breathing so much? Because the breathing is something which we can bring with us everywhere we go. But you can breathe. You got to breathe in the hotel room. You got to breathe in the toilet. Now you want to have a focus, have a concentration. You use your breathing. And the Buddha never said that you should only meditate in the hall. You meditate anywhere you go. Right? So in the foundation of mindfulness, the Buddha taught you meditate when you walk, you can meditate when you sit, you can meditate when you're standing, you can meditate when you're lying down. Right? That means at any time at all. But when you do standing meditation, or we are so used to sitting meditation and think that we close our eyes and sit down quietly. Walking meditation, moving meditation are very different. So it's through this moving meditation that you can understand this, the dependent origination a lot better. When you walk, you want to relax. Right? You say, studying for exams is very stressful. I spent 6 hours doing my computer work. I want to go out for relaxation. So you are clever. You are not like people in other people going to the pub to relax. You say, I want to go to the park. So you go there and walk in the park. You walk. Oh, beautiful. The birds, you know, and so on. Then all of a sudden, you step on the dog poo. The dog dropping. Then what happens? And you see, so dirty. You get upset. But why do you get upset? Because you are trained to think that this dog poo is dirty, isn't it? It is dirty. But getting upset, does it solve your problem or not? Does it get rid of the dog poo or not? So the only thing you can do is, I step on the dog poo, I'm getting upset now, I must look for a place to clean my dog poo away. So that's what you do. And understanding it now, how do you use dependent origination to work for you in that way? You walk, try to focus on the walking, try to focus on what you see, and all of a sudden you know that I'm not mindful, I step on it. And when you step on it, you've got to see that moment, that sensation of unpleasantness, the craving onto that dirtiness, the craving onto the smelliness. And there, from there, you can see, I think that is smelly, I think it's dirty. And you start to have intention. Your intention is to get dirty at the time, to get upset at the time. Just watch it. I'm getting upset. Learn. And when you learn that, in your meditation, when you get upset, a thought comes up, you let go. Learn how to let go. So let go, not of the smell because you can't, but let go of the thought of the whole thing. Doesn't mean that you just think that the dog poo smells the perfume. Right? It's not. It's still smelly. But at least when you know that you are holding on to it, getting attached to it, go to a place where you can clean your shoes, clean. And then after that, let go of the thought, keep on walking and relax. So that's how we should learn how to do. And that's from our meditation, we are actually realizing the teaching of dependent origination. We are making use of it for our own good. So it's a very, very big subject to talk about, but this, if you have not heard about this dependent origination, you can make use of it as the first time it's being presented to you. We have a lot of Buddhist schools use this to explain about, you know, how you get reborn into this world and all these things. But the intention of the Buddha, I don't think, is that. Because in the part, chapter 9, he talks about even to protect your property is because of that. So I read to you It says feeling conditions craving, craving conditions seeking, sitting seeking conditions acquisition, acquisitions conditions decision making conditions lustful desire conditions attachment, attachment conditions appropriation, appropriation conditions avarice, that means greed, avarice conditions guarding of possessions, and because of the guarding of possessions, they are the taking up of stick and sword. That means, you know, using swords and the sticks to fight, quarrels, disputes, arguments, strife, abuse, lying, and other evil, unskilled states. Now, it's to do with everything you should do at all. All this unskillful state. Why do we make enemies or friends? Sometimes, you know, we tend to have misunderstanding. All these things have got to do with dependent origination. If at certain stage we can cut the link, for example, cutting the link between craving and clinging. When I say, you know that you're craving, let go. When you let go, you find that whatever comes after that disappears. So this is a very useful tool for us to train our mind and to train our body. In other words, if you practice your dependent origination well enough, or practice your awareness of dependent origination well enough, you will get rid of a lot of your stress. A lot of things which makes you angry, you won't be angry anymore. A lot of things which make you sad, you won't be sad anymore. And that, in doing so, you are fulfilling the Buddha's teachings on non-attachment. You know, usually when you get monks or teachers coming and teaching, Buddha taught non-attachment. Now, this one is to tell you how you get attached and how you can get rid of it. It brings the attachment to the different small little components, the components of context, sensation, craving, clinging, becoming, birth, and aging and death. And it's the mechanics of your attachment. You can let go of it at any time, at any part. And when you let go of it at certain part, certain linkage, then there's no attachment. And you feel that it's very good. Now, when you are in the middle of being angry, you start to realize that you're angry. And you start to let go of the anger. It's a miracle, but you feel how much relaxed you are, how much relief you are. In the middle of an argument, if you quarrel with somebody, we tend to, in life, if we know how to let go, how to stop it, then you find that there's a relief. Because getting angry, getting into disputes, like the Buddha said, arguments, strife, and all these things, is a burden emotionally to us. So you look at it, this dependent origination is actually a way of teaching us into, leading us into a more wholesome way of existence. You want to feel relaxed, you don't have to go for a walk. Then you argue with your friends and then both your face getting red and then, I'm getting angry. Just let go of your anger, let go of the thing. There's an old English saying. I remember when I was a student, my English principal was telling us the best way to win an argument is to get out of it. And you can see the wisdom there. So sometimes when you're in the middle of a very heated argument and you think that both of you are wrong, just simply stop it by withdrawing yourself. You can tell them, sorry, I think it's better to terminate this unnecessary or this argument. If you say unnecessary argument, you might make the other fellow more furious. So terminate this argument and then we continue on other times. Now, I made use of this advice many times in my life. I find that instead of making enemies, we make friends. Because of flirt, maybe you never think that you're wiser than him. So with this, I'll conclude my talk. Is that enough? Now, later on, I think it's a good thing that I can talk to you because it's a very important part of Buddhism. You can say, as you go on, the Four Noble Truths, the core, is the important part of Buddhism, but you go into the real core of Buddhism, that is dependent origination. People ask you, what is the purpose of life? And I'm quite sure a lot of religion will come, what is the purpose of life? Just tell them, we don't worry about purpose of life, but do you understand life or not? Do you understand how you live or not? If you look, go through the dependent origination, it's exactly what the Buddha told you about living and how to live. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Jim, for the talk. We have a few questions from the chat. I'll address it. The first one is, how do we keep our hearts detached but still living in this world? Like surroundings, there are set paths that we usually need to follow. Example is like studying, getting degrees, getting a job, and other stuff.
You see, sometimes the Buddha talked to monks and nuns. They are the ones who have already given up and then going to work towards their enlightenment. But there's a lot of times when the Buddha talked to lay people, people like you, people like me. We have got a career, right? Later on, you're going to start a family. The monks and the nuns are not allowed to have families, but you are allowed to have families. You're allowed to have houses, but the monks and nuns are not allowed to have houses. So we have got a totally different ways. The Buddha, in other parts of the teachings, have got a lot of things to do to tell us how to live as lay people. Lay people means we don't go into the temple, like go and stay in the temple. The lay people, we have got our responsibilities. You're responsible for yourself. You're responsible for your family. Up on top there, we got our parents and our relatives. We got our brothers and sisters. Down there, we got our children and our descendants and all this. So we got to cater for them, the livelihood. Right? That means we got to work. We got to find a way of making money to support these people. Right? And the Buddha did not say that it's wrong to do it. But when we want to do to make money and all these things, we got to be careful so that we make our money not causing too much suffering to other people. Right? Then the other thing is how to be able to run your finances. You say, doesn't mean that when you earn $1,000, you should spend $1,020. Right? You go bankrupt in the end. You get stressed in the end. It teaches you how to make use of things and say, okay, you must have a certain amount of money which you save. Right? Manage your affairs well. This is the other thing it teaches. But it says one of the important things is to be able to train your mentality. It doesn't mean that when we are not monks and nuns, we should quarrel with everybody. If you've got a tendency to find fault with other people, using dependent origination to see who actually caused all this problem. We should be honest with ourselves. And then, from there, you can say it's because of my craving, because of my clinging, therefore, I create too much trouble. Right? So this is the way we go into our life. Right? When you deal with people, what sort of attitude we have to other people? Right? We shouldn't be thinking that we should cheat them all the time. Right? So these are the things we try to improve ourselves. And that's the way we stay in this world. So there are a few things which the Buddha has got to tell us. When you earn a livelihood, don't cause problems to other people. When you earn your money, and during his time, there were things like, you shouldn't deal with animals for slaughter, you shouldn't deal with slavery and all these things. So it's up to us. We look at the things. do I earn my money causing a lot of problems for other people or not? So if you don't, well, nobody stops us from earning money. Don't listen to people to say Buddhists cannot earn money. That's very stupid. Buddhists can earn a lot of money. And we can, when you earn a lot of money, make sure that we spend a portion of money doing things which are helpful to other people. That means we got to contribute to charities and all this. Okay. Does it?
No, we have still quite a few questions. Like the other one is like, is it possible to do eating meditation? Is it possible to do eating meditation?
Actually, meditation is very easy. It's just because people tend to make a big deal out of meditation. Now, what is meditation? When you look into a popular meditation, people dress up in a certain way, sit down there, cross the legs, and then do all sorts of things, right? But the Buddha, in the Satipatthana Sutta, the Buddha teaches very simple things. You don't even use the word meditation. You use establishment of mindfulness. That means you got to be mindful. Right? So in that sutta, he told us to go to a quiet place to start your meditation, to start it. Right? To go to a quiet place, sit down with your body erect, cross-legged. Now, this cross-legged thing again, during the Buddha's time, people don't sit on chairs. You can imagine 2,000 years ago in India, everybody sits on the floor, isn't it? So they got to sit cross-legged when they sit on the floor. So in modern days, we don't sit on the floor anymore, we sit on chairs. So when you meditate, you can sit on chairs to meditate, isn't it? So watch your mind, watch your body. There are four things there. I mean, it is something which is being taught in the mindfulness meditation. And from there, you learn the skill. And from the skill, you'll be able to be aware of what the mind, the body is doing together with the mind at any time at all. But for example, when you're brushing your teeth last night, where were you? Were you actually brushing your teeth or not? Or when you're sitting in the toilet, unless you get really sick, when you sit in the toilet, what do you do? People imagine things, right? So we got to focus on what we are doing at the time properly. When you brush your teeth, make sure that you get a toothbrush, brush every tooth. You know where, how it feels like and so on. When you go up the steps, are you walking up the steps or not? When you can walk in the park, are you walking in the park or not? I know a lot of people, they do things, but the mind is elsewhere. And the worst thing is, we can do accidents when you're driving a car. Because when you're driving, sometimes your mind is not in driving. I realized that about 20 years ago. One fine day I was driving. Then it goes, I don't see the road anymore. My mind was in Kuala Lumpur. I was just thinking, no. And also then I realized I wasn't paying attention to my driving. That is very dangerous. See, Anna? So we got to learn to focus on what we are doing at that particular time. When you're relaxing, know that you're relaxing. And if your friends ask you, go for a beer. It's not that you shouldn't go a beer with them, but go with them and then watch what happens when you're drinking that beer. If you get any good feelings, know that it's just artificial feelings. So this is the thing. Just be aware of what you're doing at any time is the essence of Buddhist meditation. Okay, any other questions?
The next one is, just now you said that some attachments are good. For example, something related to better our future. However, in my case, these attachments cause me some stress at times. How should I work around it?
What's that again?
In his case, like some attachment cause him some to better his future, cause him some stress at times. How should he work?
Okay. Can you get rid of worry or not? Know that, you see, when you have problems, there's problems. But you add on to it by worrying, isn't it? So it's not that you can get rid of a problem yet. But if you get too much worries on it, then you can't think properly, and therefore you can't solve your problem. So look at how much worries you put on it, and then when you start to take away, actually the problems can be quite small. Right? For example, when you go for a course, right? You do study a course, and then you think, I've got my, what do you call it, assignment to do, isn't it? Yeah, you got plenty of assignments. Then say, okay, I do it tomorrow. To come tomorrow, you do it, I do it tomorrow again. Right? So it came on until the night before. Then you get the stress. So who caused the stress anyway? Isn't it? So if you start to be able to do things regularly and when it's needed, then you can have no problems. Isn't it? It's because sometimes we are lazy, we are slacking. Sometimes we think that, well, I want to enjoy my life better. Otherwise, then you get problems. Otherwise, there would be very little problem in our life. There are times when there is really some problems, but not all the problems can be solved. But when the problems can be solved, then realize yourself that it is, there's life. Dukkha.
Okay, I'll move on to the next question. Reoccurring sensations / cravings earlier, how should you deal with these reoccurring sensations / cravings? Also, that mean we haven't fully let it go yet?
Okay. Letting go is something which we have got to learn. It's not that easy to let go. You know why? Because we are so used to getting attached to things. We are attached to too many things. Now, the most important is to be honest with yourself. There are things which you are attached to which are unnecessary. And not important at all. Try to let go of those things first. Then you can see if you are getting off those unnecessary attachments, then you find that your problem is reduced by 90%. You know, years ago, I got this young Australian guy working for me. It's about 30 over years ago. And then he's about 17 years old. One day he came and confessed to me. He says, life has been very good. I've got a good parents. I got a good job. I got a good boss and everything. And why should I get angry all the time? So I told him, easiest thing for you is tonight, before you go to sleep, get a writing pad. Write down every thought you have. Now, in those days, you use writing pads. Now you use computer, isn't it? So, okay, go and write down whatever you think, the thoughts that come into your mind. Doesn't care what it is. You can be good thoughts, can be bad thoughts. Write down all the thoughts for 20 minutes. And then get the book, then the book over, go and sleep. And then just read it the next morning and come and tell me what it is. So the next morning he came and see me. When he saw me, he says, "Daddy, help Jim. My brain is full of whatever, all the rubbish in there." Because it seems 80% of what he thought was unnecessary and all rubbish. That's what I do if we are not trained in our Buddhism. But the Buddha, it's because of this unnecessary thought that our level one of our suffering starts. So now if you are, you don't want to attend lectures, you don't want to do your assignment, you worry, forget it. You are going to fail, right? So think using your right thinking, to know that what is right and what is wrong, and the thoughts which are unnecessary. when you're having a nice bowl of laksa in front of you, you think of Chak Wei Jiao tomorrow. That means there's excessive thoughts. Eat your laksa properly. So that is what it is. Okay.